Hello, and thank you for joining us for the RealCom webinar. Today we will be talking about dealing with the changing tech requirements and expectations. And this is part one of our Navigating the Now Normal series. I'm very excited to have a great panel of speakers joining me today. But before we get started, let's go over a few housekeeping items. You can submit your questions and comments in the Q&A section, and we'll try to get to all the questions during the panel discussion at the end of the webinar. If we don't get back to you today, we'll do our best to follow up with you after the event. For the best webinar experience, we recommend that you log out of any other internet applications that are currently running. You can also download a copy of the presentation handout from the handout section, and we will be recording the session and make the recording available to you after the event. In case you do run into any technical issues, you can contact me at sbamford@realcom.com. I'd like to thank the sponsors for today's event, Sherry, Kimberly Clark, and Building Engines, and we'll learn more about these companies throughout the session. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to the moderator for today's event, Francisco. Francisco Acoba is the principal at Ernst & Young with more than 24 years of global experience providing management consulting services to Fortune 500 companies and the world's largest public sector entities. Francisco, thank you so much for moderating today's session, and I will turn it over to you.
Okay, great, Sarah, thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. So as Sarah mentioned, Francisco Acoba, partner with EY based in New York. Just for a little bit of context and how I'm related to the topic around this webinar today. So I serve as the America's leader for our Workplace Reimagined solution at EY. This is a cross-functional integrated solution that helps corporate occupiers and real estate companies transform their real estate portfolios, workplace environments, and enabling technology ecosystems to most effectively support hybrid work. And as the topic of today, the now normal. EY is a team of more than 400 practitioners serving clients across all industries and sectors on this topic, which is making today's topic very, very near and dear to my heart. So as Sarah mentioned, this is part of the RealCom Navigating the Now Normal series. Return to the workplace poses some distinct challenges that some would argue are a paradigm shift in proportion. Not only can these new modalities affect an organization's existing culture and operating model, but they can further impact the landlord, the tenants, service providers, and then the entire operation supply chain for a building. So today's topic, again, this is a part one of three on the tech landscape. There will be subsequent webinars in August and September on the topics of data and analytics, as well as workplace utilization. So without further delay, I will turn to our first panelist or presenter today. And that's gonna be Ryan Albo with Wells Fargo. Ryan is the real estate technology and innovation strategist for Wells Fargo. He has over 20 years of experience in the IT industry and currently leads a team of knowledgeable and collaborative team members to design and implement tech solutions for Wells Fargo's corporate property group. So Ryan, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Francisco. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks to RealCom and the sponsors. Look forward to hearing more about what they have to offer. So when Sarah and the RealCom team had asked me to come speak today, I kind of scratched my head wondering what it was that what we were going to talk about. I think as we look to return to the office, and in the context of technology and what's changing, I think I like to think about, before we start getting into technology, I like to really think about more of the people and process, right, that technology supports. And so in thinking about our own program for return to office, before I go down that path, just recognize that Wells Fargo has had, somewhere around 80 to 100,000 of our employees, dedicated and brave employees that have continued to do their job in the office, who've never left. many of them customer facing, who continue to help our customers see succeed financially. So I think for those of you that do and have always continued to have folks into the office, you know, a big shout out to them as they've helped to figure out how this reoccupancy actually goes. I'll touch on that here in a minute. So for those who have been working, you know, from home for this last 15 months, you know, I like to kind of group it into three buckets in terms of how expectations or requirements are changing. The first is thinking about our customer, employee, and visitor safety, right? So as we come back, as we return, safety is obviously number one on our mind. We want to make sure that as we return, we're doing so in a way that is safe for our employees and customers and visitors. You know, we've done a lot of exploration over the last 18 months on ways of doing that. We have a dedicated team who on a daily basis tracks global mandates and regulations, pandemic related factors, and they meet every single day, multiple times a day to review this information, whether it be, you know, infection rates, whether it be, you know, the availability of childcare or public transportation. And so part of what we're doing for our program is really making sure that we are doing it with data in mind and with the numbers. And so so part of our approach here is to make sure that that we're keeping an eye on that. That obviously translates into, you know, being able to track that, being able to capture that, being able to report on it almost near real time as best we can. And so thinking about how those attributes play into our changing technology roles. We've assessed the, we'll say, orderly return to space, right? So when we do come back, how does this occur? Still understanding that we have still variants out there that are very much trying to dictate how we come back. And so assuming that maybe we still do need to have some sort of an orderly return, you know, are there things like arrival scheduling, right? Making sure that not everybody shows up at 9 o'clock and we have big piles of people that show up in our ingress and lobbies. How do we deal with that as we return? Space readiness, you know, making sure we've been in the office for 15 months. You know, did you leave that yogurt cup half empty when you thought you were going to return the next day? So even just something as simple as tracking our readiness, making sure our spaces are clean, ready for our team members to come back into the office. You know, speaking about those folks who never left the office, you know, we want to collect feedback from them. They've been doing this for 15 months. They know how to be in the office right now today. They know the constraints that they're up against. They know, you know, what nearby restaurants have closed for good or that are open or that have reduced hours and how to navigate their environment. And so we're looking to make sure that we capture feedback from them and really not just capturing the feedback, but then reacting upon that feedback and making sure that, you know, any new requirements come into play are acted upon. Of course, we've looked at a lot of, you know, sort of continuous safety features, things like, you know, touchless features for restrooms, for example, or cafe areas. I've mentioned the pandemic tracking. You know, one of the areas that we also looked at was temperature screening, right? So both the sort of the airport, you know, walkthrough turnstiles, you know, have things like the camera, your video surveillance cameras, perhaps checking for social distancing, you know, so lots of different areas from that safety perspective. The second kind of grouping, you know, I like to think about our return in is really employee experience, right? So we've all been a lot of us have been working from home for these past 15 months. We've had a pretty good level of digital connectedness, right, across our organization. So we want to make sure that that digital connectedness continues, right? Upgrading some of our conference space with similar technology that you might have at home, or at least making it as easy as a Zoom or go-to webinar of sorts, or Teams meetings. And so being able to maintain that digital connectedness to team members that maybe historically you've only connected with via audio or in a conference room. Prior to the pandemic, we were looking at various different seating environments, right? Different paradigms for how we sit. I think one of the things that has happened around this pandemic is that we've accelerated some of those strategies. And so if we think about going back to more unassigned seating type environments, we've used this opportunity, I should say, to refresh standard technology kit of parts for each desk, making sure that when we go back and where we go back, we have equipment that works for us and that's standard across our portfolio. We've thought about things like access control, right? If you haven't been in the office for 15 months, does your badge still work? So all of those things, really lend themselves to thinking about how we are thinking about occupant experience or employee experience. The other sort of grouping that I have is maybe a little bit more of a catch-all. We've looked at a lot of technologies. Even the personal app tracker. And really a lot of this stuff, as the conversation progresses, comes down to privacy, right? And so balancing safety and privacy was, I think, an interesting conversation that we continue to have, but definitely, dug way deep into a lot of those topics as we thought about what technologies were appropriate to fit our employees and our return to the office. We have our own, as Francisco mentioned in the introduction, we have a pretty exciting roadmap of our own in corporate properties, and our technology partners have been a key in helping us realize that. And so that's the impact of our return to offices has obviously given us some different thinking opportunities there about what works in our environment, more virtual than we were historically. So what new opportunities can we bring to the table as we start to look at some of the new solutions that are out there in the industry as we execute on our roadmap? Of course, we have a lot of business process change, right? I had mentioned people in process at the beginning as well. A lot of our thinking in terms of how we can do things more efficiently, especially virtually, changes a lot of our business process. And so how do we leverage technology? How do we provide automation? How do we introduce new innovative solutions and technologies to help support those business process changes? Those are the three kind of primary buckets that I think, I like to think about our reoccupancy in. I think many of us are excited to get back and be with our employees, our teammates. I think a lot of us miss each other, even though we see each other on the video every once in a while. It'll be great to get back into the office with some of those folks. So, Francisco, with that, it's really all I had to kind of cover today. If you had any questions.
Great, Ryan. No, thank you. That's a great overview of things you have planned and how you're breaking it down to those three key buckets. A couple of quick questions. So I know it's still obviously in progress, but to date, how has the pandemic and some of the technologies that you're deploying, how is that impacted the actual real estate portfolio at this point in time, or is that still pending and underway?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Francisco. You know, even prior to the pandemic, I think we had a pretty good real estate strategy, right? Just generally real estate strategy. Okay. You know, I think there were a number of areas, first, that provided us new opportunities, right? So when people are not in the office, especially for a 15-month period, hey, what a great opportunity to do moves and restacks, right? Ooh. We're not interrupting business, as it were. So there were some great opportunities that we had. You know, I had mentioned the technology desktop or the workstation kit of parts refresh, right? So these are great times to be able to do this stuff. We got to test new, really great, cool, you know, innovative things like temperature screenings and these surveillance cameras that I had mentioned. So really cool stuff that, you know, maybe at the end of the day wasn't as applicable to the long term of hopefully, you know, post-COVID, but certainly opened our eyes to some of those opportunities. On the other hand, you know, because I think we had such a great strategy or group of strategies in place, you know, it really accelerated. It helped to kind of get us to that adoption a little bit quicker. So, you know, things like our unassigned seating or what we call neighborhood seating, you know, we were able to kind of push that out right away and say, listen, when you come back, you're probably going to come back to a little bit different of a seating paradigm. Had folks been in the office doing this, it probably would have been a, you know, maybe a more stretched out strategy in terms of timeline. But the, you know, not being in the office, I think, afforded us that opportunity to hit the gas pedal a little bit quicker. You know, one of the things that we, I think, probably were looking at prior and now has become even more important as we think about returning and as we return, is advanced occupancy reporting, right? So how do we understand if we're still in 6-foot distancing or if we need to implement it at any point in time? You know, do we need to scale back on the amount of seats that we can tell people are available? And so being able to understand at least in near real time who's using what, where, and how often, you know, that's going to be a huge, I think, focus and push for us coming up here in the turn of the year.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So maybe just one quick follow-up on that. Sounds like you and your team have lots of different balls in the air around this. How are you working with the business and your internal customers to understand priority of deployment of technology solutions going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm fortunate enough to be the business. So we have some really great technology partners that we work with inside of Wells Fargo, and so, you know, we always take it upon ourselves to make sure that we have the appropriate requirements that are gathered for our technology team to really get an understanding of what it is that we're trying to do from a business process perspective. Mm-hmm. And really, I think with those requirements come prioritization. So obviously, we only have so many people to do so many things and so much time. And so making sure that we understand the priority of, hey, this needs to come first, then we can, you know, fit this in and see where we are in the world and kind of keep iterating on that process through our review of our technology strategy roadmap.
Excellent. Okay, great. All right. Well, Ryan, thanks so much. We'll look forward to circling back with you in a little bit for our panel discussion. Thank you. Okay. All right. So I'm going to introduce now Susie Bayshore, who is the Global Head of Technology for PGIM Real Estate. Susie is the Chief Information Officer for PGIM Real Estate. In this role, she's responsible for the organization's technology strategy and business systems platform. Our team partners with the business to implement creative solutions around CRE financing and investing. So, Susie, thanks for joining us today. I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, Francisco. So, you know, I think it's important that, you know, to kind of reflect back on last year and you know, it's amazing really what we've all gone through. But, you know, it definitely changed the technology roadmap that we had in play. And, you know, when we were all sent home, you know, that week, you know, one of the first things we had to deal with was that, you know, our users weren't really equipped with video conferencing equipment because they really hadn't had the need for it in some instances in their roles. And through our corporate offering, we only had WebEx available, and we were sort of in the middle of rolling out Teams. And so, you know, we had to deal with users going out and getting their own Zoom accounts. And so then trying to get Zoom approved by corporate and risk management compliance. And so that was sort of one of the things we experienced. And, you know, now we're in a great place where everyone is using Teams, they can use Zoom, and they know how to, you know, use the equipment. Another thing we experienced was, you know, users are wanting to take their equipment home. And so, you know, trying to arrange, you know, for employees to come and pick up their equipment in a safe manner. And then another interesting phenomenon is when we were sort of in the middle of trying to roll out Teams, you know, using the collaboration tools like SharePoint, Teams, et cetera, you know, we couldn't get much business interest. They just, you know, just, they really weren't interested in Teams at that point. And so, you know, once they started working from home, all of a sudden, you know, we started doing these training classes again on video and Teams. And, you know, it was just really interesting how they responded to these new tool sets and actually using them. You know, also we saw expanded use of our DocuSign tool. And so, you know, new projects that popped up along the way. We had a request to, you know, build a sort of a quick and dirty application so we could track, you know, essential workers who were going into the office and health questionnaires and, you know, booking a seat and later on, you know, booking travel. And so that, you know, was kind of developed in an agile manner where, you know, we developed a little bit and then we kept getting additional requests. And so now with what we've built, many other areas of Prudential are coming to us and saying, you know, can we use your tool that you developed? So that's been interesting. We're also asked to, you know, build a writ relief app to deal with that. And then also we had recently rolled out an investor portal. And so instead of responding to users' inquiries about COVID, we were able to communicate with investors, you know, via our new investor portal. And then on our borrower portal for the debt side of our business, we spent some time adding some additional self-service capabilities. Again, so those were things that just, you know, were not on the roadmap. And it, you know, of all the bad things out of COVID, some good things did come from it. And so now I shouldn't have said after effects of COVID, because I think COVID is going to be around for a very long time. But, you know, as Ryan kind of mentioned, you know, trying to get back in the office, you know, now on our roadmap are our, you know, known projects and then these back to work projects of, you know, getting people back in the office in some form or fashion. And then in addition to dealing with the onslaught of technology that's just, you know, all over the place. And so our plate is full. Our roadmap is it's got a lot of roads in it, and so you know it's all very exciting. Some of the things again that we're now facing with is, you know, corporate's rolling out some tracing type technology. So we'll be, you know, introducing that. Again, you know, what does the office need to look like now? You know, what does it mean to us? How do you, you know, put cleaning programs in place? And another thing that's been quite challenging is, you know, now that we're trying to kind of determine how many days at office that we're going to be working. And I was visiting with someone yesterday about their recruiting process, and he was telling me that as he, you know, interviews people and they're saying, well, can I have the flexibility to work from home 100% of the time? And when this person said, well, our, you know, policy is going to be 3 days in the office, they just said, thank you very much. I'm looking for something where I can work remotely 100% of the time. So I think that's something that we're all going to be faced with of, you know, how much flexibility do we give our employees. Another thing that is a good thing is that with all the equipment that was taken home, we're now ordering a lot of new equipment, new and different types of equipment. We're expanding our, you know, video conferencing, so that's a good thing. And then something that, you know, is really working well is that across our business, we have created innovation councils, and they're industry specific, and including ESG. And so instead of it, you know, IT being tasked with going out and trying to look at new tools to pilot, the business is actually owning this and then coming to the table of saying, you know, we're interested in POCing, you know, different types of technology, and it's, you know, across all of our product groups. So that's really bringing up some new interesting technologies to look at around, you know, tenant experience apps, and actually vendors who also offer these apps, all the digital program technology, and then of course tools that deal with data analytics. So the way forward, so I think, you know, it's kind of a wait and see right now to determine, you know, if companies are really going to shrink their footprint, you know, when it comes, and it's going to become a tenant driven market, you know, versus a landlord driven market. And therefore, you know, property managers and owners and investors are really going to have to, you know, ramp up the value add amenities that they're offering. And so again, what's, you know, becoming really big are these tenant experience apps, and I'm not going to read you all the ones that are on the screen, but there's, you know, just a lot of interesting ones. Something that we're piloting is a tool called Latch, and Ryan alluded that they've been looking at some of these too, but, you know, keyless smartphone access to buildings. And then I think another thing that's really interesting is, you know, all the technology that's coming out where, you know, you can tour the buildings virtually. Another evolving technology is around, you know, technology that you actually, you know, use in the property. And so again, some of the things we're piloting have to do with doing virtual construction oversight to see what the building progress looks like. Virtual property inspections, I know those have been around for a while. Something that I think is sort of, you know, huge is the smart building technology. There, you know, are now a lot of solar consultants that they'll, you know, come and advise you on, you know, installing on-site and off-site solar capabilities, which will, you know, definitely help track the energy consumption, temperature, et cetera. And I think building maintenance software is going to be really big on the horizon. And then another thing that we're piloting is a tool called Omnify, and it's where retail asset owners can launch an e-commerce marketplace for their tenants. So again, just a bunch of really, really interesting technology to look at. And then last but not least, and I know, you know, everyone is focused on data analytics. We're, you know, creating, expanding our PGM real estate data lake, and looking at a number of data analytics tools to, you know, better capture data, not just internally and externally. You know, some of the things of where you typically use for valuations, you know, they're now adding, you know, different criteria to better value that property. If there's, maybe there's a Starbucks in the building, and is that going to affect, you know, tenants moving to that particular building? Another thing, and I think most of you will probably heard about how, you know, you can capture foot traffic based on, you know, your mobile devices. I happened to be walking early one morning in a mall, and I kind of was standing in front of a store looking at something. And so not shortly after that, I got a text of saying, we saw that you were looking at us, you know, so trying to tell me something. So I thought that was, you know, kind of crazy. And you know, we're definitely amping up our Power BI to give more of a visual view of the data that we're capturing from both internal and external data. So, you know, in kind of summarizing, you know, to be able to compete, you know, regardless of, you know, what your business is, you know, I think it's imperative that, you know, you continue to explore and pursue technology that better enables the business and your investments. You know, you can't be complacent. You've really got to act now. Another thing that I think is so helpful is where you really create a way to encourage like all individuals in your organization to be idea generators, and you capture those ideas. And then also, you know, when you're doing your POCs, you know, try to include all stakeholders, both, you know, internal and external to your organization to really drive impactful technology. So I'll end there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Susie. I just have a couple of quick follow-up questions there. So as you're working with your clients and your investors, what do you see what's the feedback you're getting around the most immediate technology investments that they'd like to see across the portfolio?
Yeah, I think the technology that's going to really affect the return on investment, and so I think some of the energy saving tools where you can see what you're consuming, I think that's going to be really critical, probably more so than the 10 experience apps.
Okay, great. And then it was great to see the emphasis you have on data and analytics and how you're working to collect and structure that data. How are you looking to leverage that data across the portfolio?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing is to, you know, really get your internal data set in order so you can, you know, really understand what's going on as far as performance-wise. Mm-hmm. And then blending that with external data and having the right tools and, you know, utilizing data scientists and that are going to, you know, reveal things that you weren't aware of, you know, in your portfolio. And so I think, you know, a lot of organizations, you know, you have a lot of data like our organization, but you're really not using it to make decisions. And so I think the more sophisticated these tools come out, if you can get your data in order and utilize some external data, it's just amazing, you know, what you can do with it.
Okay, great. Excellent. All right, thank you so much. We look forward to catching up with you in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go to our third presenter here. So I'd like to introduce Steve Kautz with Cherry. He's a head of sales and data partnerships. Steve is a 30-year veteran in the operations, sales management, research management, brokerage, and investment management arenas within corporate real estate. As Cherry's VP of sales and data partnerships, Steve is responsible for overseeing development, support, and expansion of its partner network and sales organization. So, Steve, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Francisco, and being part of this panel. It's a true privilege. In place of a quick video on Cherry, I just wanted to let everyone know that Cherry is a 5-year-old data connection technology company focused strictly on real estate. We look to basically transform the way we make decisions in the real estate space, whether it's for acquisitions or asset management purposes. And our business is not a data provider, but a data connection platform that connects really three streams of data: public data, third-party subscription data, internal data, into custom analytics data warehouses that can be consumed in any way that our customers or common customers may look to consume that data, whether it's within their models, their CRMs, their Power BI tools, etc. By way of context, as I roll into this, and one of the reasons why I wanted to touch on this is that I've been in the real estate space, analytics space, for I got close to 30 years. I was with CoStar when they were a startup in the mid-90s. I was with them for an extended period of time, spent time with Reese, ran research for Studley, now Savills US, for 10 years. And I saw kind of the evolution over the last 20 years or so of what's been happening in the mindset of called the tier one or primary data providers in the space, and how that has evolved over time, and how the evolution of their thinking and mindset in regards to how they make their data available is so critical to us moving forward as an industry and kind of catching up to the financial services industry in regards to transparency and efficiencies. That said, a lot of the historical players, we call them the must-haves today in regards to market fundamental data, on cap rate data, sales transaction data, asset property management type data. These were the survivors of the hundreds and hundreds of companies that were around and giving it a shot in 2000, 2001 prior to the bust. And post, the post bubble in 2022, these companies took an increased ratcheted up effort to protect their data from being used inappropriately, being downloaded, being commingled, et cetera, et cetera. And rightfully so. I mean, at the time and over the last, most of the last 10 years, the only way to work with disparate data was literally to run reports from various locations, have your analysts or team of analysts probably evaluate that and roll that up to the executive team for decision making. And God forbid they change their mind or approach, then you have to go back to the drawing board. The other option was to download about as much data that was permissible by the given data provider, try to create some even larger massive Excel spreadsheet that's queried or viewed in a Tableau environment or a Power BI environment, and try to answer those questions in a more efficient fashion. The problem is, once that data is commingled, it's impossible to undo it. So if you're a primary data provider of historical content that's been built over 20, 30, 40 years, the last thing you want is someone to download that data and then have it commingled, and then ultimately inability to unwind it. So that's kind of the historical problem, and it kind of makes sense. But fortunately, and again, the demands have not changed in regards to from the analysts, from the data teams on in the large firms and the small firms, as far as the speed at which they expect answers. The industry looks at the fact that, oh, there's even more data for us to look at, so we can get even more targeted and granular in our queries and either off market, on market opportunities, or more advanced asset management benchmarking. The problem is, it just increases the workload on the data teams, on the analysts to try to consume this data and try to figure out what's good and what isn't. And that's ultimately the problem that we've been facing over the last many years, is we just cannot, data is actually becoming almost a bad word. It's like, I can't handle more data because I can't consume it and figure out what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's not. But fortunately, we're making some progress and some inroads into trying to get to, the end game, which is, how can I be more efficient in my acquisition approaches or my asset management approaches, whether that be investing or lending and or managing my portfolio and making those decisions as far as what to keep and what not to keep, what markets to be in, what markets not to be in, et cetera, et cetera. So again, we all kind of know what the goal is. We've been reaching for that goal for many years in various approaches, but the sheer overload of data and information is actually creating more of a problem, not less. So net, how do we change that dynamic? We tap into technology and technology capabilities that allow for an efficient ingestion and connection of all data that's being evaluated or it's accessible by a given company, whether it's public data, whether it's third-party subscription data, whether it's those valuable nuggets of internal data that they've been sitting on for years and years and never been able to monetize, bring those into a centralized point, call it an analytics warehouse per se, and where that information can be pinged by the entire organization to answer whatever questions that particular department might be interested in answering. And the good news is, we are now in a position to do this. Historically, it's been a build versus build decision. Only the companies, the largest companies that have the largest data budgets and have the largest teams of data engineers and data scientists and have time to work on this could actually attempt to tackle the project. And some of the biggest organizations in the world have tried this time and time again. Some have done a fairly good job or a pretty good job of it. Others have spent tens of millions of dollars just to mothball the effort. So here lies the challenge, is how do we connect this growing universe of data into an efficient analytics warehouse that can be consumed by the end user, but more importantly, or equally important, continue to be siloed in such a fashion that the data providers will feel comfortable with actually having the data consumed in this fashion. And that leads to the technology piece of the discussion. And by far, I will take a feeble attempt at trying to describe this graphic, which was built by our chief engineer officer. But generally speaking, it's about the ability for data science teams and data engineering teams to create we call them swim lanes, or the separation of data sources, clear separation of data sources within an analytics warehouse. This graphic shows about separation of public data versus internal data versus subscription or partner data, we call it, but it could also apply to the 10 different data sets that you subscribe to from various providers in the marketplace that you want to combine and ingest. If those data sources, the raw data sources, are not cleanly separated into their own, call it rooms within that analytics warehouse, then that data provider is not going to permit you to do it. They do not want that commingling of data. The word data warehouse or warehousing of data is kind of like the bad word when it came to these historical data providers. That word was never allowed in our agreements, and it was just a no-go. But if you understand the true definition of data lake versus data warehouse and understand the technology behind it, it becomes a little less horrifying. Data lake is generally a storage location, right? Whether it's cloud-based, et cetera. So that can be turned on and turned off. The data may or may not be stored in that source. But once it actually goes into an analytics warehouse, Steph Arna, head engineer, described warehouse as it's a large building with lots of rooms. And each room has its own set of data in it, and that data stays in each one of those rooms. And the key to allowing and maintaining the security is to maintain that fact that siloed nature of that data within that given warehouse. But where the logic comes in, the custom logic comes in to ping that data, is that the logic sits on top of that warehouse and pings various rooms for various data points on call up to the analyst to pull that information into their tools or their models. So it's kind of like a real-time extraction of data from multiple sources. And the beautiful thing about this is it's very, very efficient. It's a single one call versus multiple calls to the data. And if any one of the data sources were to be pulled out of the equation, it doesn't break the rest. It just simply no longer populates that particular data point on that given call. So we've come a long, long way in regards to the ability to ingest data efficiently, to silo it within the analytics warehouse. And an important part, which is really, I would say that it's kind of our secret sauce when it comes to Cherry Goes, is the data governance or standardization. You can only pull and connect data in efficient fashion if you have a single key. We talk about keys within connecting data, right? And the reality is, for just the U.S. alone, there's 170 million properties. We've identified over 3 billion addresses that correspond to those 170 million addresses. How could that be? Well, 100 Main Street could be described in 10 different ways. Same thing goes for entities. One example, JP Morgan Chase and its related entities, we've identified over 25,000 ways that JP Morgan Chase is described as an entity. So unless you resolve the entity and the address resolution, then you can't connect the data. And that's kind of what we're all about. The business logic is up to the end user or the entity as far as what questions to ask of the connected data. But net, if you don't have the technology available to connect this, the data providers are not going to allow you to access the data in a raw format. And ultimately, you're not going to be able to consume it in an efficient manner. This last visual, just a sense of some of the players in this space that have embrace this over the last 12 to 18 months. They have in many cases have put out an API that they never had before. They're allowing their data to be connected with other third-party data sources via consulting platforms like Cherry. And the reason they're doing it is you know, they're not doing it just to be nice. They're doing it because they see an opportunity as well. Stickiness is everything. Retaining their customers in the long haul is important. Once you've once your data is part of their models, it tends to not be undone. Also, raw consumption of API data via a platform like Cherry's or others, it typically requires an upgrade. So there's that potential for additional revenue. And many times there's demand by these large paying customers to import their data into third-party applications, whether they're CRMs or models or off-the-shelf models and things like that. So that allows for that. And then also the more establishing and creating a more sophisticated API. You know, you have REST APIs and GraphQL APIs. I'm not going to get into that. But the bottom line is how do I efficiently ping a growing universe of data in a rapid fashion? And lastly, more granular permissioning. One of the things which is key to realize is it's not just a problem that's being it's not just a benefit that's being realized by the biggest firms out there that have big budgets, big data budgets, big engineering budgets. But with more sophisticated APIs, you can permission down to a very granular cell level, market level, sector level. So it allows data providers to actually upgrade the long tail of the market and provide direct data services to you know, regional users that focus on just a particular sector, et cetera. So with that, I know that's a long-winded discussion, but bottom line, in a 20-year history in where data has come and going, but it's critical on the technology front if we're going to respond to the questions that are being asked of our teams, that we figure out a way to ingest, connect, and resolve data on the fly as more and more data is brought into play.
Excellent. Okay, well, Steve, thanks so much. Appreciate that. And just one quick question for you before we go to our next panelist here. Maybe tell us a little bit more about how Cherry and your team, how are you specifically working with the data providers to optimize the services and provide them insight as to what's really needed there?
That's a really good question. A lot of these data providers, again, the most famous ones, the ones that are kind of like the critical ingredients, they've delivered their content via UI for many, many years, right? Mm-hmm. If they had someone paying enough, they might provide them with a raw data file, but they'll be real nervous about it. So one of the things that we're doing with our data partners is one, in some cases, building out their API for them. We might go from, help them mature their API from a REST API, which is kind of like a holistic download of their content, to a GraphQL API, which is a more specific ping. And then the third piece, which I mentioned earlier, is that granular permissioning of their data. Mm-hmm. There might be a use case for 5 data points from Reese, not their entire solution, mm-hmm. or 3 data points from Trap. So if you can just sell those data points, you can reach a much broader, wider universe and ultimately find customers where you couldn't find customers previously.
Great, excellent. Oh, that's a great point. Okay, sounds good. We'll look forward to catching up with you in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. So we're going to turn now to an overview video around Kimberly Clark and some of their solutions. Ian, I'll turn to you.
Realize the rewards of being together again. Welcoming clean, healthy spaces, friendly eyes, new and familiar faces. You help make it possible to bring people together again. But with elevated hygiene standards, you need new tools to help you succeed. Great hygiene starts in the restroom, and Onvation makes it easy. Kimberly Clark Professional, featuring trusted brands Scott and Purell, now brings you Onvation, your connected software solution that brings intelligence into the restroom. With Onvation, you gain real-time visibility on product consumption and traffic patterns, helping to improve facility hygiene. Onvation enables smart, proactive restroom servicing so you can help assure the wellness of others as they return to work. Your job helps us rediscover the rewards of being together. Onvation helps you make it possible.
Okay, great. Thank you. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Matt Trout. Matt is the Associate Director for Dispensers and Onvation with Kimberly Clark. He has been more than 20 years of global experience around sales, marketing, research, engineering, and business leadership roles across Asia, Australia, and North America. So Matt, we'll turn to you for your presentation, your discussion.
Thanks, Francisco. Thanks for the kind introduction. And I'm just going to move straight into this, because what we're looking at here at Kimberly Clark is, as businesses begin reopening their physical workplaces, they're not actually only just facing the changed work practices that we've talked about earlier, but we're also seeing a real shift in employee concerns around hygiene, and that's been driven by the events of the last 18 months. As a leader in hygiene, Kimberly Clark's been observing these shifts, but we've also been watching the rapid growth in IoT and smart buildings. This technology can transform the way building managers respond to these new expectations, allowing them to deliver a whole new standard of hygiene and user experience. I'd just like to show you a bit of what I mean. There we go. Sorry, I was having a technical issue here. So I don't think it's news to anyone in this audience that technology is changing the way facilities are managed. 90% of buildings already use at least one form of smart building technology, most common being in lighting, HVAC, or even security badge systems. And as the cost of sensors, connectivity, and data storage continues to come down, the opportunity exists to deploy this technology into even more areas. Restrooms are an area that often receive very little attention in terms of smart buildings. In fact, just 12% of IoT devices out there are deployed for occupancy analytics. But this is changing. Restrooms actually have an outsized impact on people's perceptions. They're one of the most highly trafficked and most complained about areas in any building. Smart restroom software can transform both restroom servicing and the user experience. It enables facility managers to make better decisions based on critical intelligence and real-time information about how traffic flow and people interact with the restrooms inside their buildings. And the importance of restrooms is actually reinforced when you look at some of the figures that are out there. For example, 74% of respondents in a recent survey felt that if the restroom isn't clean, it probably meant the rest of the facility isn't being cleaned either. And that's growing in importance. COVID-19's changed people's views around hygiene, particularly when they're away from home. Last May, we conducted a survey to better understand how people feel about the germ risks posed by away from home locations. And comparing these results with a similar survey we conducted 10 years earlier highlighted some telling changes. Back in 2010, high concern respondents represented just 32% of the overall pool. In 2020, that had increased to 50%. And interestingly, 3/4 of the respondents see all away from home environments as either high or moderate risk. And this is a real watch out to buildings as they reopen. Because what we're seeing here is that these concerns translate into changed behaviors. Behaviors that require facility management teams to adapt to a new reality. The good news is that a smart restroom system provides real-time visibility of what's actually happening within a facility. For example, the charts you're seeing here are examples of the insights available to users of the Onvation smart restroom system. These systems are providing a real-time view of the gradual uptick in building occupancy that we've already been talking about today from various customer locations across the country. But that's just the first step. Once you're in the facility, it gets even more complicated. Even before COVID-19, up to about 40% of office space was empty on any given workday. But at least the traffic flows were relatively consistent. Our systems are now showing the impact of flexible and hybrid work hours in the form of greater volatility in daily traffic flows. Traffic patterns now vary between days and even between which areas in the building are being used. As a result, traditional schedule-based cleaning routines are obsolete because the cleaners can't flow to where the people are, and they're forced to simply react to complaints when restrooms or other areas have already failed to meet user expectations. A further level of complexity comes from changes driven by increased hygiene concerns. As you can see from the chart on the right here, people are actually using more soap and towels per visit than they were pre-COVID. This presents a further risk of product runouts and undermines the facility manager's ability to demonstrate their commitment to tenant satisfaction. So in the end, facility managers need to be strategic about how they deploy their cleaning resources, making their efforts visible, and this system allows that. It allows people to reassure the building occupants that health and safety is at the forefront of their efforts and provide that reassurance. Smart restroom systems like Onvation allow facility managers to proactively control restroom servicing. That means they can not only meet their tenants' elevated hygiene standards, but they also provide a winning point of difference versus more traditional counterparts. There's a couple of examples on the screen, but on that, I'll hand back to you, Francisco.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Just a couple of follow-up questions for you. Specifically, you talk about the solutions that you and your team have developed, but many organizations, you know, already have, for example, a facility management platform or technology in place, and or they're leveraging a third-party supplier platform. How do your solutions from a technology perspective integrate into those broader platforms?
Yeah, that's a great point. Our systems are designed to connect into existing systems. We're already talking to a number of providers that have got systems in place. Most of those connections are through APIs. Okay. We can also do direct connections as well.
Okay, great. And you know, one other just a question is thinking about, so I'm based in New York here, and I was reading an article the other day that mentioned the average age of a commercial building and office building in Midtown Manhattan is about 70 years old, right? So, you know, this is just a reality of the stock in New York, right? Every building is not brand new. How easily can your solutions be deployed in older and existing, and especially older buildings?
Yeah, it's interesting. The older I get, 70 doesn't sound so old anymore. But the answer is these systems are designed to be easily retrofitted into existing facilities. Okay. Most of Kimberly-Clark's business is they're modular systems that can be changed in and out of existing facilities. We might need to upgrade a dispenser or two, but it's not a case of ripping. It's not a full-scale renovation to put this stuff in because it's all cellular or wireless.
Okay, excellent. Very good. Okay, sounds good. Well, Matt, we look forward to catching up with you in a few minutes.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, all right. So we'll turn now to an overview video on building engines. Ian, I'll turn it back to you.
Hi, I'm David Osborne. I'm the founder, former CEO, and chairman of Building Engines. Back in 2001, we created the first modern operations management platform for real estate owners, managers, tenants, and vendors. But back when I started this company 20 years ago, real estate was a laggard industry, some 20 years behind any other major industrial space. But thankfully, times have changed, and Building Engines has led the way. Building Engines has spent the last 3 years and tens of millions of dollars redeveloping its core application. We call it Prism. Prism is without doubt the most effective modern operations platform in the business. If you're not yet a customer, I look forward to having a conversation with you or having our team demonstrate Prism. And if you are a customer, thank you for your long-term partnership. In the end, we understand that our success only mirrors your success. So far, it's been going pretty well, and I expect that trend to continue.
Okay, very good. So at this point, I'd like to introduce David Osborne, Executive Chairman of Building Engines. As mentioned in the video there, so David is a founder of Building Engines and currently serves as Executive Chairman. His 30 years of experience founding and leading early stage companies in the technology sector. He served as CEO of Building Engines from 2001 to 2017, growing it to over 100 employees with over 2 billion square feet under management. So David, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, can you see me?
We can see your presentation. Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Francisco. And really, it's an honor to be a member of this panel. I just want to talk, and I realize we're a little bit behind time, so I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible. I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of software and software adoption in CRE, commercial real estate. I want to start by talking about the past, what the past looked like, what's really happening now, and then give you a little peek into the future. But really, the most important thing is to talk about what is sort of the evolutionary playbook for software in major industrial spaces. And what's happening now is really just reflective of what's happened in a bunch of other major industrial spaces in the past. So unfortunately, we're in an industry, real estate, that's a bit of a laggard industry in terms of tech adoption. It's probably 15 years behind any other major industrial space. And if you look at the tech spend as a percentage of gross revenue, you know, you'll see that in real estate, it's probably 1/4 of what it is in any of the other major industrial spaces. I'm going to advance the screen here, hopefully. Maybe somebody, there we go. So right now, real estate is at the end of what I would call phase one of that evolution. It's still a relatively fragmented marketplace where you'll see siloed operating companies in each one of these spaces, and tenant experience is relatively new. It used to be called tenant satisfaction, property operations, risk, and analytics. Each one of these areas has a set of functional applications that are critically important to building owners and managers to solve problems within the building space. Many of them are siloed solutions, meaning that they solve really only one or two problems. And that presents a bit of a problem for the owner and the manager. And then, of course, it robs them of some of the great benefits that you'll find when you see phase two begin, which is the platform phase. And just there are a number of companies there that are siloed, that are examples of that. But what happens when you get to the platform phase is you get these multipliers where you get integrated workflows. So for example, where you have a visitor coming into the building at the back door, it may be a vendor, you don't know whether or not they're properly insured to work in the building. And so you'll have another application that will look up their certificate of insurance status to make sure that they are properly insured to the building minimum so they can come in the door. And those are two different applications that work together. And then you may have to go and update that COI, and that's even a third application. So when an application begins to work together, you get that platform multiplier. And that integration only really works well if those functional areas are fully integrated. And then finally, when they are, and you get that database or record with all the data like that we others on this panel have been talking about, you get business intelligence. So that's an opportunity that really hasn't come to fruition because all the data hasn't been captured. So that's sort of phase one. And just to give you an idea how I think about real estate technology today, it really falls into the three main categories. Operations. Right now, there are really dominant players there. I believe Building Engines is one of the dominant players with Prism. And then AppFolio on the multifamily side, or Buildium. They're good examples of platforms that are in the operations area on the, you know, in a slightly different segment than Building Engines. And then leasing, that leasing is everything from attracting the new tenant to managing the entire life cycle of the lease. There are a number of big players there. VTS is one of the players. CoStar might be entering, I don't know. I probably should ask Steve about that and see what he knows about CoStar. And then, of course, in accounting is an area that's existed forever. It's really a highly siloed area. And when I say siloed, I mean that what you're doing is you're providing a solution to only a subset of the constituents within the building. Platforms really provide a set of integrated solutions for the full constellation or the full constituency of the building. So that's what we're going to talk about in the next phase. So what are the problems that siloed solutions like we saw in the past really provide to owners and managers? Well, you know, multiple sign-on. I got to sign on to this application to do this and that application to do that. And then, of course, the workflows are incomplete in the sense that they really don't talk to each other. The example I gave of the visitor coming in the back doors, where if you aren't integrated, you don't have that kind of visibility into who's coming in your back door. You're just managing whether or not they can come in. And then you have disparate use cases which really look different. So you've got training requirements that are onerous. There's no data integration. There's no functional integration. And then, of course, there's really poor cross-functional visibility. So you really don't know what's happening throughout your building because you have to be signed into multiple programs. And I think we heard Susie talk a little bit about all the different applications that she manages in her life at PGIM, and that's very typical of any real estate owner and manager today. The platform benefits on the other side, as you can see to the right, on the right side of the screen, is a single sign-on. So sign into one application and you can do almost anything, and you can access almost any function within the building to support, you know, whatever problem you're trying to solve. The best solutions have an API first design so that you can easily integrate best of breed siloed providers as well with the overall platform, which may have many functional areas but may not address that particular area as well as this particular provider. So only a really strong API based platform can really support integration of that best of breed provider. And then, you know, you've got the platform being the database of record. So for all those functional areas and all that data that's flowing in from those functional areas, you're capturing it all. So when you are actually going to apply analytics or you're going to do a little AI, you're going to have all the information available to you. And then I think the cross-functional visibility is what's the most, what's the most compelling about the platform solution. And centralized reporting really rolls out of that. And, you know, building engines of my company, you know, we're API built from the ground up. We're the most modern application in our space. But we see that really adds tremendous value for our customers. Look at us and say, wow, you know, I can sign in one time and I can access all the different functionality that you guys provide, plus I can access some of the functionality that I've really used for years because I've easily integrated it into your platform, and that all that data is being captured and it's available to me so that I can get a complete report. So, you know, this is what, you know, a functional platform looks like from the customer. You know, you get all that functionality that addresses certain areas on the top, you know, work orders, building communications, inspections, preventive maintenance. Those are areas, specific and complex areas of building management that has a solution that's designed specifically for it. But with a platform, all of those solutions are integrated so that if you're, for example, doing preventive maintenance and you find a problem, well, you have to open a work order when that problem is discovered, and that work order's got to go through its full life cycle. And the integration of the two is critically important. That's just a simple example. And then, of course, all the reporting rolls in after that. And then in this example, you can see your certificate management. That's typically a siloed function. And if you can bring that into your platform, then you can bring in all the certificate of insurance data and perform the full vetting of someone who might be coming into your building to make sure they're complying with all your building standards. And then if you think about how our customers see the software, you get the presentational layer, and then you've got the platform layer. The presentational layer is all the easy things that I talked about. It's mobile optimized, there's role-based design, it's centralized reporting, and then you've got the really important guts of the program underneath, where you've got great security, shared data sources, and compliance. And then lastly, I just want to talk really quickly about what's next. You know, now you've got these great platforms like building engines, and we're, what's the next phase for that you should expect to see in the future? Well, that's the ERP phase, and it's happened in every other major industrial space where you've gone from fragmented multiple siloed solutions into the platform phase and then out of the platform phase into ERP. Now, ERP is different because what you see is fully integrated functionality in all aspects of the business. And it all is very seamless and often highly customized for that building, that business itself. So is there, are there any real estate ERPs out there? Yeah, there are, they're in their infancy, but an ERP is something that's really essential to the operation of the business. It is part and parcel of the business itself. That's really what's going to happen next. I see that happening fairly quickly, and you'll see all of the areas that are in that circle there all be integrated together into one. And that's when this, when a functional solution in an industrial space really comes to full maturity. So that's the simple story. Back to you, Francisco.
All right, great, David. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Great insights and detail there. Just a quick question for you. So you mentioned that the technology priorities are changing, and you outlined how you see things from that management and operations perspective. From you, from the perspective of your team at Building Engines, what do you see as the vision for the future of the tenant experience itself? And how do you see that being enabled by technology?
Great question. You know, it's really very cool to see how the tenant itself has changed. You know, in the past, the owner and manager really talked to the SPOC, the single point of contact tenant, you know, the office manager in the space. And that's really how, the only way that they knew what the tenant was needing, if there were any problems in the space. Now that view is expanding to what we call the MO, the mobile office employee, which is everyone else in the building. So those together really are the tenant base. And how do you measure their satisfaction? How do you make sure they're getting what they want? And how do you know exactly how to manage your CapEx or things that are related to tenant satisfaction? Well, you've got to have tenant engagement, and that's what tenant experience is all about. There are some great applications that are sort of in their infancy. Many of them require a lot of boots on the ground to be successful, meaning people gathering data, building relationships with local vendors. I think the best tenant engagement applications in the future will be those that address the needs of the tenant on this other half of their life. They spend half their life at home and half their life at work. That application's got to address the typical needs of the office worker within that building, not just, you know, do I get a deal at the local pizza shop, but is the environment really appropriate for me? Are the resources appropriate? You know, is this a place where I can actually be, be the most productive office worker that I can be? So those are coming. They're definitely in their infancy, and Building Engines is watching them very carefully. And of course, we'll build some or all of that functionality into its platform in the future. But it's very much in its infancy, and there's a lot of interest in it. You can see that there are a lot of companies like PGM who may be testing some. Those small players are going to be vetted, and the survivors will either expand into a platform or be subsumed by a platform and then eventually become part of the overall ERP.
Excellent. All right. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, David. Okay, so if I could ask the RealCom team to bring up our panelists here, we'll jump into our Q&A. And for the audience participants and listeners, please do feel free to add any questions that you have to the chat feature. I'm happy to get those addressed now, if not on a discussion line after the session today. Maybe just to kick things off, we'll open it up with just a overall question for some of our panelists here. So, at Ernst & Young here, we actually in New York City, just reopened our offices, and actually we moved into a new global headquarters at One Manhattan West. After many years in our previous facility, and we've deployed a number of different technologies to support workplace environment management, optimization of space and the workspaces, safety and health, et cetera, touchless and antimicrobial surfacing and all the things we've been talking about today. What do you see as maybe two or three of the top technologies that can be deployed by either the owner operators or the corporate occupiers to enable this this now normal, as we're terming it? So Ryan, I'll turn to you first. We cannot hear you, Ryan. Can you hear us?
Looks like he's having problems.
Oh, all right. Well, let's Matt, how about we start with you?
Thanks, Francisco. I'd say the biggest single thing we're seeing is really the need for occupancy sensors through buildings to understand where people are and try and inform cleaning schedules. And I'm not just talking about restrooms there, it's the whole building, understanding who's in meeting rooms, where they're being used, how to manage traffic flow and balance it across the building. So that's probably the biggest thing we're seeing through both our own customers and from our partners.
Okay, great. Susie, how about you from a PJM perspective, thoughts on top technologies to be deployed?
Yeah, so what's top of mind in our organization right now and at Prudential is really having, you know, tools in place where, you know, employees can be tracked as far as who's in the office, you know, what does the floor plate look like, how many are, you know, are you 40% occupancy, et cetera, in addition to know, you know, who's traveling where, and so all having those stats, and then I think the technology for the keyless entry is going to be big too.
Okay, great, excellent. Ryan, I think we have you back. How about your thoughts? Yeah,
can you hear me all right now?
We can, yes.
Sorry, can you repeat the question, Francisco? I dropped on audio somehow, I'm not sure.
No worries. We're just thinking about the top two or three technologies that could be deployed by either owner operators or corporate occupiers in this new or now normal, as we're calling it.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the work, we call it occupant or workplace experience, not just tenant, obviously, as a corporate real estate operator, you know, we think about our employees as much as anything else. So work, that workplace experience and enhancing that workplace experience and figuring out how to, you know, improve or build upon what mm-hmm. we've done so far. I think that is one key area that we're focused on. And, you know, I resonate, David's presentation resonated a lot with me. You know, it's sort of the connectedness across all of this. And then even, and so I know this is more than two, but even the Steve's presentation about making sure that we've got the appropriate, you know, data strategy in place. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, those three are real key to us as we approach the new year and some of the initiatives that we're going to embark on.
Okay, great. Excellent. So maybe turn our attention to what's next. You know, what do you see as the next wave of innovation, automation, and technology for the workplace? Steve, why don't we start with you?
Well, again, I think back to transparency and efficiency, right? I mean, in time back to your last, you know, it's all about communication and collaboration and accountability, I guess, right? Number one, right? As far as who's working where, be able to communicate, et cetera. So that's from a technology standpoint, it's the basic things of using, you know, Google appropriately or whatever your platform might be. Kind of the next wave, I think it's going to be a little hard to unwind what's happened, right? You know, many have scattered to the wind and have established a new lifestyle post-COVID or in COVID, and therefore, can we wind it back completely? So in anticipation, we're going to be kind of in a hybrid world going forward. We have to be able to adapt to that. And I think any technologies, tools, accountability tools are going to be critical for us to continue to work efficiently going forward. So,
okay, great, excellent. Maybe turn to challenges going forward. What do we see as the greatest challenges going forward relative to the innovation and technology landscape? Susie, how about we start with you?
I think just, you know, in general, one of the challenges is there's so much technology out there, and like, where do you start, you know, as far as like, you know, for a property itself or a building itself, you know, there's so many technologies where you can centralize your, you know, everything that's going on in the building as far as, you know, running your elevators. And so really just, you know, assessing, you know, what tools are available, and then determining, you know, who to go with, and then figuring out who should pay for it. So I think, again, it can be very overwhelming in general.
Got it. Okay, makes sense. Matt, how about from your end?
I think Susie touched on a couple of great points there. I mean, to my mind, when as we look forward, yeah, people are changing. The way people are expecting to operate in a building are changing, and that is going to change what's expected as a basic offering of services. And it gets down to, okay, this is going to be change. Change costs money, and how do I make sure I'm putting those resources in the combination of tools that are going to give me the greatest impact? Because we've all invested in things where we've said that looked good on the premise of what I thought people were going to do. Mm. And people are unpredictable animals. They don't always do exactly what you'd like them to do.
fair point. Ryan, how about from your perspective? You're dealing with one of the larger portfolios out there. What do you see as the greatest challenges?
Yeah, you know, for us, you nailed it, Francisco. Scale is always a big deal for us, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to think about how do we scale this globally to our footprint, real estate footprint, and to our, you know, very diverse set of employees throughout the world. You know, it was just maybe, Francisco, if I could go back to one of your earlier questions about, you know, what's coming. You know, we've been sitting at home for a long time, and everything's kind of at our digital fingertips right now, right? So how do we translate that into business, and how do we supply those, resources to employees in that fashion? I think that comes with the challenges, again, scale. I think there's also, let's not forget, as Susie and Matt covered some of the building technology area, that we also have a new sort of environment of cybersecurity that we have to think about. And so, you know, with those tools, we have to think about privacy. We have to think about those, you know, widgets that we're putting out into the onto our networks that aren't necessarily, we'll say, IT, hardened, right? Fortunately, I'll put a little plug in here for our real estate cyber consortium, but there's a group of folks who are thinking about this. And if you're not already connected, I would encourage folks to do so, especially as you go down this cybersecurity path. You know, one of the things I think we try to do, Francisco, to help deal with these challenges is do a risk assessment. And sometimes that's not as easy as it sounds on the surface, but to start with a risk analysis, figure out what you want to deploy, how you want to deploy it, whether it be on the, you know, workplace experience side, whether it be smart building technology. As Susie said, we got to find some folks that can, we'll say, supply the appropriate resources to make that a success.
Got it. Nope, that makes sense. Very good. Okay, so we have a question just came in from the audience. Are there any technologies that you thought would be key to reopening, but have not proven to be very effective? Anybody want to jump in on that one?
I'm happy to start, Francisco. We had done a pilot, as I had mentioned before. We'd done a pilot with temperature screening. I don't even know what you call them. You know, like you're walking through a metal detector, they seem to actually work pretty well for the most part. I think, in retrospect, some of the challenges especially with the current virus is, you know, we don't always find people that have temperatures that may be carrying the virus. And so we kind of, you know, we deemed it a successful pilot, but it was not something that we, and so it was effective. So I can't say that wasn't effective, but it just wasn't something that I think we determined we would deploy at scale.
Got it. Other thoughts there?
Well, I can say a few things on that front. I'm not sure that there are that many failures out there, but I can tell you what the challenges are. I think they're really twofold. The challenges to the owner who of the building who needs to attract in concert with the tenant owner, the employee base back into the building. And that's making the building look safe, feel safe, make sure that when the tenant employee arrives that they want to be there, they feel they can be as productive there as they can be at home. And that requires, you know, a lot, as Steve said, great communication. It requires great management of expectations. So there's got to be a lot of communication around what's happened in my building. Have you upgraded your systems? Have you put in new filtration? Do you have new elevator management protocols? What are those things that make coming to your building easier and safer? There are a bunch of programs out there that try to do that well, but those programs all have to be already engaged with the tenant base and the building owner and management base in order to do that well. Otherwise, they have that first challenge is just to connect with them. So I think those protocols are critical for this first phase of reentry. And any system that already is engaged with the tenants and is good at communicating clearly and crisply about what's happened in the building is going to be successful.
Yeah. Just to build off David's point there, Francisco, I think the other thing is to decide what do we want to make visible to the building occupants and invisible. Sometimes there's stuff you want just to happen in the background, but some of the things we're talking about here, you almost want to be as visible as possible to provide that level of reassurance.
Yeah.
And just thinking through in terms of what do people need to assure them to so that they are comfortable to come back in.
Okay. All right, good. Excellent. All right. Well, we have 3 minutes left here. I'd like to do a quick speed round with the panel. So what is one key piece of advice that you would give our listeners today as they proceed with their digital workplace technology enablement programs and in many cases, just getting them off the ground. So Ryan, we'll start with you.
Yeah, partner tightly with your technology team, or if your technology partner tightly with your business team.
Okay, very good. Susie.
Yeah, I would say, you know, create the format where, you know, not just, you know, it's not just about your day-to-day applications, you know, but it's more about, you know, creative thinking and but create that structure so innovation happens. Otherwise, you know, it's just kind of all over the place. And so.
Okay, very good. Steve.
I would say just don't try to do it all on your own. Take full advantage of the resources and the expertise that's out there. You know, at the Cherry, we say that we want to be best at one thing, not all things. And I think generally speaking, there's a lot of phenomenal firms out there that are best at one thing. So the thing is to find those players and engage them. Outsourcing and buying versus building is that buying is not a bad thing, right? If it means it's going to get you up to speed quicker and more efficiently.
Got it. All right. Matt, how about you?
I think to my mind, it's prioritization and working out how am I going to build things over time. This isn't going to be a one-off hit. It's a case of how do I integrate various elements as building blocks to improve the environment over the next 12, 18 months as well.
Okay, excellent. All right, and last but not least, David.
Well, I will tell you that the most important thing that you think about are expectations. Everything in life is about expectations. So if you haven't already reached out to your tenants, if you're a building owner or even a tenant owner, and you reached out to your employees, you should reach out right away. You should measure and better understand what their expectations are coming back to work. That is critical because that's what drives life. You know, am I getting what I expect? And if you're not, you're not going to come into the office. You're not going to be performing. You're not going to be productive.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, thank you so much to all of our panelists today. And Sarah, I will turn it back to you.
Thank you so much, Francisco. Very great job leading the panel. And I also want to thank the panelists for joining us today. Really appreciate you sharing your insight with the community. And of course, want to thank our attendees for joining us today to listen in on the session. I do want to invite you to join us for a couple of events that are coming up. We do have our weekly WILLCOM live show going on tomorrow. That's in a live newscast that's going on at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific time. Tomorrow we will be featuring Sujit Kisha from Prologis. And then next week we have a webinar on advanced analytics in AI and machine learning, and you can sign up for that session by going to our website, realcom.com/webinars. And then if you haven't heard yet, we are planning our conference and we'll be at the Westin Clearland in Scottsdale. And that's going to be at the end of October, early November. And I'm hoping that all of you will be able to join us. And with that, I want to thank everyone again and hope everyone has a wonderful rest of your day. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.